It's 8:13 now. Good morning. Well, the campaign to place a medical cannabis initiative on the November 28 ballot has launched its signature gathering efforts. On the phone to tell us what needs to happen between now and next November is DJ Sauls. He's the co-campaign director for the Utah Patients Coalition. Good morning, DJ.
Good morning.
So if you would just begin by telling us what the Utah Patients Coalition is and how your group is funded.
We're funded through individual contributions. We still need a lot more funding to take this through to the finish line. We've got seed capital enough to get going right now on the initial signature gathering drive, but by no means is it complete. There's a lot more work still to be done, both on signature gathering and fundraising.
So it's an all-volunteer fundraising effort then? Is that what you're telling me? No grants from anybody else?
I don't quite understand the question, but yeah, we're collecting fundraising from anyone that can give. All individuals thus far has donated. We're excited about what we've been able to do thus far, as far as the seed money's been concerned to get going on this. But by no means is it complete, and we have a lot more that we need to raise.
So it's taken a while for you to get even here before you could start collecting signatures. So what was it that the process? Tell us a little bit about that. You had to first get the ballot language certified?
Correct. So as we've drawn this bill up, it had to get certified through the Lieutenant Governor's office that there weren't constitutional issues, et cetera. That got approval about 3 weeks ago. At that point, we started to get signatures. And so we've been getting signatures for about the last 2 weeks and have had seen tremendous success in the limited amount that we've done through volunteers. A paid effort is going to get underway this week of paid signature gatherers. So we're extremely excited about the direction things are going.
So what is it that you're asking voters to vote on?
Well, initially, obviously, when you sign the petition, this is just to put it on the ballot. A medical marijuana or medical cannabis, as we call it, program. It's a highly regulated bill, one of the most highly regulated actually in the country. But it's a medical-only program that would put this, if you sign it, basically it's saying that this is, we want to get this on the ballot for November of 2018 for the voters to decide on this issue.
So they'll see ballot language if in fact you get the required number of signatures later.
If we get the required number of signatures, which would be around 115,000 signatures, this will be on the November 2018 ballot, yes.
All right. And now these signatures, they can't all come, say, from the Salt Lake area. You have to get so many and different Senate districts or counties, or how does that work?
It's Senate districts. So the state is interestingly divided the Senate districts, where most of them touch the Wasatch front or back. There's 29 of them, and we have to get 26 of the 29 Senate districts the signatures in, which would be equivalent to 10% of their presidential vote total for 2016. So it's proportionally broken down to 10% of the presidential vote total for the 2016 presidential vote.
So we've seen proposed legislation for medical marijuana before the state legislature a couple of years ago. Lawmakers declined to approve anything until they had seen some research on the issue. So where are we with that?
Well, as far as going through the legislature, this is in response to things not getting done at the legislature. So what we're doing is when you go through a ballot initiative or petition process, you're no longer working with the legislature. You're taking this decision directly to the people. And this is a great process. You know, there are circumstances where with overwhelming public support and when a legislative body fails to act, I think the ballot initiative process is the right process to go through, and that's what we're doing. So this is not working through the legislative process. This is actually working through the petition or ballot initiative process.
Sure, but don't you think it's important? I mean, wouldn't those studies that they're trying to do that would perhaps bolster your cause be kind of important to have as you go through the process?
By no means is Utah a trailblazer on any study or on any legislative efforts on medical marijuana. So any study that Utah is trying to do or is thought to be doing, by no means are they a leader in this process. In fact, they're probably about 25 years behind the curve on it. While we appreciate any studies that can be done on this, it needs to be done concurrently with patient use, which is what has failed to be given to any of the patients involved in this.
So if people are interested in signing on, how do they do that?
They can come to our website, which is www.utahpatients.org, to get more information and to find signing locations. We're going to be at Park Cilly this upcoming Sunday. And also, if they'd like to shoot us an email through the website, we can coordinate them with people that have packets in their area. We've had over 600 people request packets to get signatures. It's been a great problem to have.
Okay. So in terms of the success of this, I mean, really all you're trying to do is just allow people to vote on it. It's just giving them the opportunity to vote.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. So we think people should have the opportunity to vote on this. Public support is overwhelming. In the last Dan Jones and Associates poll, it was over 78% support. We feel really strongly that we have a great shot at this once we get it on the ballot in November 2018.
And again, we do have final ballot language that you can find online as well?
Absolutely.
Okay. And again,
that is on our website. That's on our website as well, final ballot language, or the Lieutenant Governor's Office website.
Okay. UtahPatients.org. DJ, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, we're just extremely excited about this process, about the volunteers that have volunteered. Like we said, we're in the initial phases where it's a real hustle to get funding and support, but we've been encouraged by what's happened thus far.
All right. DJ Sants is the co-campaign director of the Utah Patients Coalition. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Park City High School Principal Bob O'Connor recently gave the Park City Board of Education a report that showed some encouraging signs. He joins me now in the studio with kind of a dive into some of those numbers. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
First, before we get into those numbers, first week of school, how did we get off?
It was a great start. Kids are excited. Teachers are doing well. So it's a great start.
Crowded?
It is. We have about 75 more kids than we did last year.
All right. And where are we with plans then to put the ninth graders into there? We need some rooms first.
Yeah, we do. I would need at least 16 classrooms to house the ninth grade. And so I think with the bond on hold, I don't think we'll be seeing the ninth graders anytime soon.
All right. So we've got 75 more than last year, and you were telling me off air just that a big incoming class of 10th graders, huh?
Yes. The outgoing class last year was about 378, and the incoming sophomores is at 450.
Wow. Well, let's take a look at first the graduation data for 2016. Park City High School, I guess it was actually 2017,
correct.
Park City High School had a 97% graduation rate. That was higher than previous years, but we have seen those kind of numbers before. So can you tell us what happened in those years where the rate dropped?
Well, 97% of our seniors graduated last year. The state will recalculate that by subtracting any student that left Park City High School, whether they moved to California or somewhere. So they'll count some of those kids against us. So that rate will go down in October when the state recalculates that. But I don't anticipate it going down below 95%,
okay.
which is the goal.
All right. So, I mean, and what does that mean, that 5% didn't graduate or 5% left school before graduating?
Both. They moved away out of the area, or some kids did not graduate.
Okay. But in terms of just the kids who didn't graduate, isn't that really all we care about?
It is. Yeah. If a kid moves, we hope they have success, and most of them probably do. But, yeah, we got to focus on the kids that aren't making it.
Okay. So do you think this is the increasing numbers related to any kind of program or
No, it's just growth. And 75 more kids is unusual.
Yeah. So has the state come out with a different way to measure graduation rates or anything?
No, they've always done that. We don't track kids that leave school and whether they graduate in another state or school in Utah.
Okay. Let's turn to the AP Honors courses. You had also a report on the participation in the summer school AP prep program. My understanding is that it was full. Any idea how many kids you had to turn away?
We had, I think, about 10 kids on a wait list for our ELL, English Language Learner Summer School program started by Melanie Moffitt. And we've had great success with that. those kids are pre-taught vocabulary and skills to be successful in AP and concurrent enrollment classes. We had 40 kids sign up. That's double what we had last year.
So this is only for ELL kids?
It's for our Latino students in an attempt to close the achievement gap.
Okay. What if there were kids out there, though, that were not ELL language learners and still wanted an opportunity maybe to get into an AP class? Would they be allowed in?
They would, yes.
Okay. In terms of what qualifications are needed to get in, I mean, what do they have to show to?
They have to apply to Mel Moffitt and Anna Williams, and they generate the list. There's a funding concern as well because it's an expensive program.
That is paid by whom?
Right now, Mel secured a grant from Utah State University for $100,000 over the next 5 years. And we have to pay the teachers. They take a field trip to Utah State University, and, of course, we feed them lunch.
Okay. So how many kids did you have then?
We had 35 kids that went through the program this summer.
And do you have money left over then for the next 4 years?
Oh, we do. We do. But if it continues to grow, we're going to need some more funding.
Okay. Have you applied to, like, the Ed Foundation or anything?
We're in the process of doing that right now.
So why was this a good thing? I mean, you say it's with hopes of, you know, shrinking the achievement gap. But, I mean,
well,
we won't know that for a while, will we?
No, we're seeing success right away. We've made some gains on the gap. And just by having those kids in classes and being successful is a big difference. In 1996, we only had 7 ELL kids. And in 97, that went up to 50. And it's right about 75 right now. And so without English skills, it's tough for kids to be successful.
Yeah. So I don't understand why we want kids, though, in AP classes. I mean, we've got lots of successful students who don't take AP classes.
We're trying to prepare them for college and create that college rigor in an AP class and concurrent enrollment classes where kids are earning college credit while still in high school.
Okay. And that concurrent enrollment is run through where? UVU?
UVU, yes.
All right. Do they need to have a ride to be able to get there?
No. They're taught by Park City High School teachers.
All right. So
during the school day.
Ah, yeah. So when you talk about closing the achievement gap, I mean, what are we seeing with that?
We're using the ACT and assessment called Galileo.
Okay. And what are you seeing with those numbers?
We're closing the gap between our Latinos and Caucasian students.
Yeah, I mean,
we're making gains.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess I'm just trying to figure out what that gap looks like and what is it that gets closed down to zero. I mean, so you wouldn't.
Yeah, I think our Latino kids were 40 percentage points behind the rest of the student body, and so that's what we're making gains at.
Okay, and again, those are based on the ACT scores and the Galileo scores.
Correct.
And Galileo, that's the just the reading?
No, math, language arts, and science. But we take a pretest in the fall and the post-test in the spring, and we see the growth that kids make over the course of the year.
Okay. So in terms of trying to bump that program up? I mean, where are you going to go from here in terms of trying to secure more funding for larger classes?
Well, you mentioned the Ed Foundation. That's one. Dr. Connolly has offered to contribute some school district funding as well.
Right. And then let's just talk a little bit about college preparedness data. Some of the numbers that you showed, it looks like the scores are mostly flat. I mean, you saw a few points increase in reading, but then we saw a slight drop in language arts.
Are you referring to AP scores?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the numbers, we had 200 more students taking AP last year, knowing that with increased enrollment that scores could drop. And they didn't drop as like we had feared. But I'd rather have more kids taking AP classes and getting that rigor and college-level experience. And that's our goal.
Yeah, so when you have to find, you know, room for 200 more kids, that means that you've got to hire more teachers to do that?
Correct. We have 6 new teachers this year.
Right. And many of them teaching AP? Is that what it's?
Some of them are, yes, and have in the past. We've hired experienced teachers that have AP experience.
Okay. What else can you tell us about the numbers that you reported on?
Again, like I said, our Latino kids have experienced AP success. And the pass rate that we anticipated going down with the 200 more students taking AP courses, we're still hovering around 70% as a pass rate, which is pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. What the pass rate is, what, a 4 on the test?
At least a 3.
At least a 3.
Yeah.
Yeah. And at that point, they get the college credit?
Correct.
Cool. Okay.
Depending on the school they go to.
All right. Hey, Bob, thanks for coming by.
Sure.
It's the principal of Park City High School, Bob O'Connor. Utah Department of Transportation plans to begin install fencing along Interstate 80 eastbound this week. On the phone with an update of that project, as well as the proposed sound wall, I have UDOT Project Manager John Montoya. Good morning.
Good morning.
So tell us what the deal is. I mean, we had thought this was going to happen at the same time that a new climbing lane on the westbound lanes of I-80 was going to be built along with that new wildlife bridge. So you've moved it up?
We have. We've been able to find some advanced funding for the fencing portion and a small portion of the fencing portion, I should say. And we're proceeding with that, which includes a mile of wildlife fencing along the eastbound lanes and then an additional 1,400 feet on both the eastbound and westbound sides of the freeway. So that's what we're working on now and hoping to get done this fall.
So tell me what this fencing is. I mean, it's 6 feet, 8 feet tall?
Yes, it's there's portions of the fence out there now along the Jeremy Ranch Golf Course. It's the same as that. It's an 8-foot high fence that is designed to keep wildlife from coming onto the highway and getting hit and causing collisions with vehicles.
So is it working?
Where we have continuous fencing, the wildlife fencing has worked very well. Down on the other side of Parley Summit, there's a good stretch of fencing with that has worked effectively. And so we're hopeful that this will have the same results as that.
Yeah. So do we have numbers in terms of wildlife collisions? I mean, are we seeing them drop or do you expect to once this is installed here?
Yeah, I think that once we see the fencing installed continuously, once this project is complete next summer, by late fall next year, we'll have continuous fencing basically from Jeremy Ranch all the way across and down to Lambs. And so we would expect that there would be a big drop in that area for any kind of wildlife vehicle interactions.
And tell me about the wildlife bridge. Does that get built then next spring, next summer?
Yeah, the funding becomes available for the bridge this October. And given the late year funding, we will be starting that in the fall. It goes just on the Salt Lake side of the county line near the top of the summit. Yeah.
So all of this fencing then kind of directs the animal towards this overpass?
It does. It funnels it on both sides toward the overpass, and this really is the best opportunity for the wildlife to pass over I-80. It really will be the only opportunity for them to pass over I-80, you know, through that stretch of highway.
Yeah, some concern that it might be too narrow. Have you modified the width of that at all?
Well, our studies show that it will be effective. It's currently 45 feet wide, and our studies show that it will indeed function as we expect it to. It will be certainly the best opportunity, as we've discussed, for wildlife to go underneath. There won't be really any other options, and so we're very hopeful that it will work as designed. Currently, wildlife, large animals, deer, elk, moose, even bear, are attempting to cross the highway, and so this is certainly going to be a better option than that.
Yeah. Let's talk briefly about the climbing lane. So that'll get under construction then sometime next year as well?
That's right. We're planning to start that in the spring as well. The funding is also an October funding for the climbing lanes, and that will kick off probably March, April, depending on weather.
Okay, and this is adding a climbing lane basically about the Jeremy Ranch area up to the top of Parley's and then just onto the other side of it?
Yes, exactly. We'll add one more lane in the westbound direction.
And then what about the proposed sound wall? Because as a result of that, UDOT was concerned that the noise would be more than what you'd hoped for. So you were going to take a vote of the 25 or so residents there in Jeremy Ranch living next to the interstate to find out what had happened. Where are we with that?
Well, currently we're investigating options for let me back up a little bit. As part of a project that adds capacity to a highway, as this climbing lane project would do, we're bound by federal regulation, federal law, to conduct a noise analysis, both of the existing noise and the future noise in the area. And we've done that now, and we believe that certain thresholds have been met in terms of a need or desire to mitigate either existing or future noise levels. And so we are currently in the process of investigating options on how we might best accomplish that and leave everybody a winner up there. We generally build a sound wall adjacent to the highway, and we have heard some local concerns about that approach. And so now we've taken a step back, and given that we have the time to kind of slow down and investigate other options, we're doing that now. And I would expect that we still will move forward with a vote on an option that we believe suitable or more acceptable to everybody up there shortly.
And can you talk a little bit about those options? I mean, are we talking berms here? What other options?
Well, we have investigated berms. There was some desire from residents in the Jeremy Ranch area and other areas to investigate a berm that was adjacent to the Jeremy Ranch golf course. And we have done that, and we have found that it basically is impossible for us to make the berm tall enough in that area to fully mitigate according to our federal criteria. And so a exclusive berm option is probably not likely. What we are looking at now is combinations of berms and walls, which would reduce the height of the walls, you know, make them shorter and move them away from the highway, possibly either onto the area between Rasmussen and Jeremy Ranch Golf Course, or potentially even between I-80 and Rasmussen Road, berming there, and then shorter walls. So those are the options that we're evaluating at this time, and there's still some engineering decisions that need to be made in terms of those options, and we're trying to sort that out now.
So you hope to have those options to the public, what, next spring as well, or are you going to spend the winter on those? Or
I think it would be more like an October time frame, and I'm not sure that there would be that we would present a ton of options to the public. I think what our plan is to come up with, you know, an option that does meet the needs of the noise abatement and also reduces the height of the wall. I mean, I think that's what we've heard is a major concern, and that's what we're working for.
All right. So you're in Summit County this morning to do what, just to kind of do a preview of the wildlife fencing?
We are. We have, we're underway with the fencing now, and good milestone for us to step back and I guess celebrate that we've come this far and been able to get the advanced funding to proceed with that portion of the fencing.
Real quick, this may be out of your jurisdiction, but we heard about some big traffic backups from those trying to get to Park City from Salt Lake City this weekend. Is this I-215 bridge project, I-80 project, is it done, or do we have more to come?
I couldn't answer that question. I apologize for not being better informed on that one. I'm not the project manager on that. I would expect that it's not done, but I honestly have no knowledge.
Okay. John, hey, I appreciate your time, though, this morning.
You betcha. Thank you.
It's John Montoya with the Utah Department of Transportation Project Manager with the wildlife fencing. KPCW News Time now, 8:50. Good morning. Well, earlier this month, Mary Krista Smith started on as the new Summit County Health Department's coordinator for youth mental health and substance abuse. She joins me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So tell us about the position. I mean, it was, I believe, at one point going to be paid for by Summit County, Park City Municipal, and then the school districts.
So a big picture overview is that the Mental Wellness Alliance was formed and hired Aaron Newman to be the director. And through that alliance, they've hired me to be the Communities That Care coordinator. And so my specific role is facilitating the all the programs and the stakeholder groups who are addressing mental wellness and substance abuse prevention for young people, for youth, up to the age of 24. So I focus on the youth component under the umbrella of the alliance.
So you report then to Rich Buller or Aaron Newman then in this case?
I report to Aaron Newman, and Aaron Newman reports to a executive board that's made up with representatives from Park City, from Summit County, from Valley Behavioral Health, as well as the Summit County Health Department. So I like to think that I was truly hired by the community. I'm not a health department employee. I'm not a county employee. I'm a community employee.
All right. So what's your background then to do this role?
It's very similar to the work I did with Summit Community Power Works. It's stakeholder engagement. It is aligning the community in all its entities around the county, around a vision of long-term change and implementation of programs that work for addressing mental wellness and substance abuse prevention. So it's a convening role, a facilitator and gathering role of all those entities, because we have so many excellent programs that are happening in silos, and we really want to have a coordinated, data-driven effort throughout the county.
So what would be success? I mean, what is it that you're hoping to accomplish here?
We are hoping to accomplish that we as a community are providing the opportunities for our young people to learn skills and be positively reinforced so that they're engaged, healthy, thriving members of our community and engaged, healthy, thriving adults, that they are able to have the skills necessary to navigate the choppy waters of life in an effective way that is healthy for them. And when they stumble, that there are the resources there available to address it way upstream so that we're not seeing really serious detrimental outcomes in our young people.
Yeah. So how is this being done? I mean, is it school classes? Is it community gatherings? Is it teen programs? I mean, what are some of the ways that you're going to use to make this happen?
So it's interesting. The Communities That Care model that was adopted by the school districts and the health department it was chosen in particular because we've seen 30% reduction in alcohol use, 30% reduction in tobacco use across the country for communities that have used this model. And so it's a model of facilitation to gather the community stakeholders together and look at the data and say, what are we seeing? What are the biggest risk factors we're seeing? And what are those protective factors that we can nurture and bolster for our young people so that we're heading those risk factors off way upstream. And so then the community board, if you will, the stakeholders, they assess the data, they look at the risk factors that are present, and then they select the programs that will be implemented countywide to address what we're seeing in the data. And the data comes from what's known as the SHARP survey. It's given to every student in Utah, grades 6 through 12. The 2017 data will be available to us within the next month, and that really is driving the next phase of our process so that we do the data assessment as a collaborative, as a coalition, and we select those programs together as a coalition.
And certainly we have the kids, in those that are in school, we kind of have a captive audience. But once they leave school, then when you start talking about the 18 to 24-year-olds, I mean, how is it that we, you know, we don't have them doing surveys? I mean, how is it that we're going to find them?
That's a really good question, Leslie, and I think it's one for our coalition to look at and to address and to see. And I imagine, and I really know that the wisdom and the resources available to tackle this huge challenge are available within our stakeholders. I know that Valley Behavioral Health, I know that Summit County Health, I know that there are different agencies within our community and individuals who have ideas about how to best address those challenges of that 18 to 24-year-old group. And we welcome them to the table to help us develop those plans and strategies going forward.
All right. So what have you been doing the last month? You've only been on the job three weeks, maybe.
I have been loving it and am so thrilled and honored to be chosen to be in this work. I've been training in Denver along with other CTC facilitators, mostly from the Colorado area, and diving deeply into the process itself so that it can be implemented with fidelity, and also reaching out and connecting with all the various people in the community who have been working on this prior to my arrival. Jerry Holmes from North Summit, Shad Sorensen from South Summit, Ollie Wilder from the Community Foundation have all been connecting me with teachers and counselors and students and psychologists, and it's a convening of a wonderful group of people. So I've been jumping in, learning a lot, and talking a lot.
So we should start to see this school year, though, something come out of this.
Absolutely. And I imagine that we'll have, by January, a really clear idea about the direction that we're headed collectively. We'll have an opportunity to assess the data and to select programs by that time. And we're very fortunate in the Park City School District to have the new associate superintendent, Dr. Ben Belknap, on board, who his purview is to take a big picture look at student wellness. And so to have someone within Park City School District focusing on that full time is an incredible asset to our community. And I really commend the school board and the school district for making that investment.
Okay. We look forward to hearing how it all works.
Thank
Mayor
you, Krista, Leslie.
Thank you for your time.